We are going to move to item number 21. This is informational items. 21 on our agenda, Mountain Lion Action Plan. And we'll have Byron Buckley and Stephanie Buckley, along with Andy Lindblom, joining us virtually for item number 21. Go ahead, Andrew.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, Secretary Roebling, again, Andrew Norton here, Wildlife Program Administrator. Before Stephanie, Byron, and Andy jump into the presentations, I just want to provide a little overview of what they'll be presenting on. I don't want to take away too much of their thunder, but hopefully it'll put into context what they'll be presenting and kind of focus the potentially useful upcoming discussion here. So we've been in the process. Andy usually will present these action plans. He's done it for, I think, deer a few months ago, pronghorn. And so this month will be mountain lions. And he'll be presenting the third part of this, but the first two parts are going to be more technical information of what our program really provides. So John Canta, the terrestrial program chief, he supervises all the staff in this program. And what we do is try to provide objective information for making some of these decisions. This couldn't be more valuable in a situation such as mountain lions, where opinions are extremely divisive and there's a lot of conflict between who should get to hunt what, when, how many there should be out there. And really what we found through this process of going through stakeholder meetings and internal staff meetings over the last 6 months, in addition to just being ongoing because mountain lions are such a high profile topic, what we found is a lot of the conflict lands on two things: the population objective in the Black Hills, and then subsequently the population estimate that then drives that population objective. So a lot of the work you hear again from our program surrounds population estimates. That's the easy part. We can go out and estimate a mountain lion population. If we're not happy with the estimate, we can put in more resources if we feel that it's worthwhile. John Canta mentioned $200,000 from Rocky Mountain Elk. So, for example, we could spend another $2 million and get a much better population estimate. Again, easy, just depending on how many resources we want to allocate towards that. So Byron will talk a little bit about how we can get better population estimates to inform where we are at relative to that objective. The much harder question, and I present whether it's non-resident, resident hunting opportunity with antelope and deer a couple of years ago. We just talked about it with turkey. This is the really difficult component because it's a completely subjective social issue of how many mountain lions should be in the Black Hills. There's absolutely no right answer. Someone could say there should be zero and they could be justified. Someone could say there should be 1,000. So, I think Stephanie's presentation is going to be extremely valuable. She really digs into trying to get what I started this talk off with was objective information, trying to get the proverbial finger on the pulse of what our stakeholders think about that mountain lion population objective. So she's surveyed different groups. She'll get into the details, hunter groups and then resident groups out in and around the Black Hills, and tried to get an objective feel of, do they want more, do they want fewer mountain lions? And then follow that up with, if they want more, fewer mountain lions, how that hunting opportunity should be distributed. We've heard a lot of the testimony yesterday about hunting with hounds. There's obviously boot hunting with mountain lions. There's also other ways we can hunt mountain lions during different times of the year, and she'll get into that. What I really want to highlight is we saw a lot of public comment this last month, and it shows one side of the issue. I use the word objective. That's not a way for obtaining objective information. That's obviously we get one side of the picture. So I'm hoping Steph can kind of illustrate from a statistical standpoint how we try to get a better finger on the pulse of our stakeholders. And again, she'll identify those groups. Byron will then present on the population estimate. Hopefully it doesn't get too technical, but it's a 10,000 foot overview of, in essence, how we try to estimate the population and some shortcomings of the current approach we have, but how it does provide some utility. And then finally, Andy will get into the action plan, which might be a more general overview, but also our important guiding document that informs some of the recommendations we make. So hopefully I didn't go on too long there, but I'll turn it over to those three and hopefully they can help with this discussion.
Very good. Thank you, Andrew. So do we have Byron and Stephanie online yet?
Good morning. Can you all hear me?
We can, yes, and we can see you as well.
Okay, wonderful. Good morning, everyone. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. My name is Stephanie Buckley, and I am the Human Dimension Specialist here for Game, Fish, and Parks. And I am pleased to present this morning the results from our Mountain Lion Public Opinion Survey that we conducted earlier this year. So first, I will just share some concepts related to survey sampling methodology so that way we have some shared language while we discuss the results of this study. I am going to then describe the methods that we used to collect this data, and I'm going to pull out two pieces of information that came out of this survey. This was a larger study that had numerous batteries of items that we collected information on. So due to time constraints today, I'm going to focus on attitudes towards mountain lions as well as our mountain lion population objective, as Andrew just described. But we can, of course, have more discussion as it might be helpful. And I just want to verify, can you all see the presentation?
No, not yet.
Okay, let's try something else here. All right, how about now?
I believe we can, yes. Yep, there we go.
Perfect. Okay. So the purpose of this study was to collect social science data from both Black Hills residents as well as big game hunters to help inform the mountain lion population objective in South Dakota. So we're helping to bolster our mountain lion action plan by obtaining attitudes, perceptions, and opinions related to mountain lion hunting and also mountain lion management. So as a conservation social scientist, whenever I'm tasked with collecting human dimensions data that can help support our decision making, there are lots of different tools and things to think through in terms of how much data do we need and how should we go about collecting that data. And so one thing that we can use is probability sampling. So broadly, this is a sampling technique that involves randomly selecting a small group of people, a sample from a larger population, which can give us the best chance of creating a sample that's representative of that population. So we're really looking for unbiased, as representative as possible, conclusions that can be drawn about that population through inferential statistics. And so although it might be desirable to conduct a census of every single member of that population, that can often require a large amount of resources and time and can be very costly. And so in the social sciences, sampling is a great way to take a subset of that population, which requires fewer resources, it's quicker to conduct. And oftentimes the key word here is representativeness. We're looking for some kind of an estimate of that population based on the sample selected, which is a more efficient way of collecting data. So in terms of having representative data, the way that we can go about achieving that is essentially making it such that all constituencies that are in that population that we want to generalize to have some known chance of being selected into our sample. And so we can use things like what I have here on the screen, Cochrane sample size formula, which allows us to calculate what our ideal sample size should be given some desired level of precision, confidence level, and an estimated proportion of the attributes that are present in the population that we want to measure. And so talking more specifically about this study, as I mentioned, we wanted to collect information from both hunters as well as Black Hills residents. So first, focusing on our hunter sample, we had a population of 27,227 unique applicants for resident mountain lion hunters and Black Hills big game hunters. So for our sampling frame, we sampled folks from the most recent seasons respective to 2022 to 2023 of mountain lions statewide and Black Hills hunters, as well as the other Black Hills big game species that you see in this list here. And so using that sample size calculator, we determined that statistically it would be appropriate to sample 3,600 individuals, and we decided to sample specifically by hunter type. So we had three groups that we sampled. So first, we had a group for exclusive mountain lion hunters. So those are folks who applied for mountain lion, but no other big game that you see on the list there. We also wanted the perceptions of those who were exclusive big game hunters who did not opt to hunt mountain lions during the most recent season. And then a third group, which was comprised of hunters who hunted for mountain lions, applied to hunt for mountain lions, and also at least one other big game that you see in that list. So for our completed sample, we had 1,698 responses. And to calculate our response rate, we do have to adjust the sample size to remove undeliverables, email addresses, mailing addresses. And so we received a 48% response rate with a margin of error of plus or minus 2.3% at a 95% confidence interval. So again, kind of coming back to the statistics of all of this, and we're talking about margins of error, confidence intervals. What this means is that our statistics will be within 2.3 percentage points of that real population value 95% of the time. So this is a measure of how much uncertainty do we have in our results, showing that this sample might differ from that whole population. And so often when we're doing social science data collection efforts such as this, we really aim to have anywhere from 3 to 6% error as sort of an appropriate range. So having less than 3% error is considered ideal. So we're really happy with the response. And then we also surveyed residents. So for that population, we had 62,213 mailing addresses that our wonderful GIS folks here in the agency helped us to acquire. So for those folks, we looked for residents that were within municipalities in and around the Black Hills, and also those who were outside of municipalities but residing within 15 miles of the Black Hills Fire Protection District. So for that sampling frame, so that larger list that we drew our sample from, this spanned the counties that you see here, Custer, Fall River, Lawrence, Meade, and Pennington counties. And for our sample here, we determined that 6,050 mailing addresses would be appropriate for our sampling plan, and we received 1,644 responses. And so our response rate here was 32% with a margin of error of plus or minus 2.4% at a 95% confidence interval. So again, less than 3% at that margin of error. So we're pleased with the results. So now we'll move into discussing what we actually found in our survey. Again, this is just two items that came out of that survey. It was a larger survey effort. So first, we're going to focus on attitudes towards mountain lions. And we asked in our survey the following prompt: people in South Dakota hold many different opinions on mountain lions. How strongly do you agree or disagree with each of the following statements? We had 10 attitudinal items that were included in this battery of questions, and the responses were measured on a Likert scale, where 1 was strongly disagree and 5 was strongly agree. So 3 is the midpoint on the scale, which would be an indication of neutrality for that item that's being rated. So we had 3 items that captured the existence value of mountain lions, 3 that captured attitudes towards mountain lion hunting, and then 4 items that captured the risks or threats that people perceive of living with mountain lions on the landscape. So now getting into the results here. So those numbers that you see on each of those bars, those are the averages of the responses for their residents and the hunter sample. And so again, where those averages round two indicates what level of agreement the average resident or the average hunter might be perceiving on each of these items. So for the existence value of mountain lions in South Dakota, we found that that was valued. So we're seeing here, you can see the means round up closer to the 4 point on the scale for our residents. So the presence of mountain lions is a sign of a healthy environment. It's important to me that mountain lions persist in South Dakota for future generations. It's important to me to know that mountain lions exist, whether I ever see one in the wild or not. So that lighter, those lighter bars, you can see that on average, residents agreed with this. And for the hunters, those latter two items, there was also a level of agreement there. For the next set, mountain lion hunting, we found a high level of agreement with mountain lion hunting being supported as a tool for management. So you can see the highest bars there for hunters. Hunting is an acceptable way of managing mountain lion populations. And then finally, those risks and threats items, respondents were neutral, that mountain lions pose an unacceptable threat to people, livestock, and pets. We do see that the averages for hunters on that final item, that mountain lions pose an unacceptable threat to ungulates, that did round up closer to the agree point on the scale, while residents were neutral on this item too. So what does all of this mean? So this is showing the full range of attitudes towards lions in our state. And so managing lions can be a very controversial topic, and so understanding how various stakeholders perceive lions is an important component of management that can be responsive to public values. And so we can see that here, right? There's a variability in the sense that hunters might be feeling that, yeah, okay, perhaps there's some threat here to ungulates, but also they, at the same time, they still agree that it's important to them that mountain lions are here in our state for future generations, and whether they see one or not, it's important to them that they exist on the landscape. And now moving into our mountain lion population objective. So we asked, over the next 5 years, would you prefer to see the mountain lion population in South Dakota decrease, stay the same, or increase in each of the following locations? This was asked on a scale of 1, decrease a lot, to 5, increase a lot. And so you'll see the midpoint on the scale there is that 3, which is stay about the same. And all of these averages round to that point on the scale for both residents and for hunters. So for residents, stay about the same in CSP, Black Hills Fire Protection District, and statewide outside of the Black Hills. So we see that the average is round to the 3 point on the scale. You can also look and see what percentage of the sample selected each of those 5 Likert points, and over half of the resident sample selected stay about the same in each of these locations. And then for our hunter sample, same thing, stay about the same. All of those averages round to the midpoint on the scale. And the percentage of folks who selected that midpoint, that was always the largest percentage. So 46% for CSP, 42% for Black Hills Fire Protection District, 47% for statewide outside of the Black Hills Fire Protection District. And so with that, I just want to thank you so much for the time and for your attention this morning. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Very good. Thank you, Stephanie. Any questions for what we've just seen with the survey that was done? Comments from the commission? Seeing none at this time, let's continue on. Where are we going to hear from Byron now? So let's hear from Byron, and then we'll see what additional questions, if any, we may have.
Can y'all hear me and see my screen?
Yes.
Awesome. Morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Secretary Roblin, Byron Buckley, Senior Wildlife Biologist out of the Rapid City office. Like Andrew said a little earlier, is this in presenter mode? Sorry, this is not.
We can see your slides on the left. Yep.
Better?
That's good. Yes, you've got it.
Sorry about that. Like Andrew said a little earlier, I'm going to give you all a 30,000-foot view of how we're estimating our mountain lion populations in the Black Hills. The easiest way would be to count them all, to get a census. But as Steph said earlier, these type of counts would be astronomically expensive, time-consuming, and resource-heavy. And so the way we get around that is we take samples from our population. Counting mountain lions is extremely difficult. They're very elusive. They're mostly nocturnal during the activities. And so we use a modeling approach, which we're taking samples from a general population to extrapolate to the entire population. The old adage is correct. All models are wrong, but some are useful. And we think that these are useful models for estimating populations of this nature. So we strive to make sure we have high precision and low bias. We can increase our precision by having a higher sample size and collected throughout the year if possible. And we want to make sure our biases are extremely low. To do this, we use every model has statistical assumptions. So we want to make sure that these assumptions are satisfied to the best of our abilities. These assumptions can be our marking aspect for tagging doesn't have any impact on their survival, or the sample that we are taking is representative of the population. So if we can get the bias low, we are more sure that we're going to be towards the middle of the target. And so for our mountain lion population, we use what's called a Lincoln-Peterson estimator. This is a mark recapture estimator. This estimator has been around for quite some time. It's the late 1800s, and then it was modified in the 30s to look at fish populations. So deer have been used, this model has been used for deer. I've used it on turkeys, Rio Grande wild turkeys in the state of Texas. So the mark recapture model has two different time frames that we're interested in. We have a marking period, which we go out for mountain lions. It's pre-season. We go and do a biopsy dart for DNA. So we capture, we find as many lions as we can, and we dart those, and then we retrieve the darts for the DNA. And then the second time frame is our hunting season, our harvest. So any individual that is harvested during that year, we have a great system of mandatory reporting. And so every one of those individuals that is mandatory reported, we take a small tissue sample for additional DNA samples. We send those off to a lab for DNA analysis, and any individual that is harvested and marked for that year will go into this model as well, into the denominator. And so just to give y'all a quick example, I know the slide's pretty busy with all of the graphics here, but we generally have an unknown population. And so we don't generally know what we have out there. So we go out and we sample, and we will take, just in this example, we took 26 biopsy, DNA biopsy darts from 26 lions. And then we move into these hunting seasons. So this is everything that has occurred. So we usually have a hunting season, give or take, depending upon how many are harvested. In this example, 45 were harvested and 15 died, say, from car collisions. So if we run that through the model, we would get an estimate of about 190. That's using all harvest. But when we use all harvest, there can be some bias. We don't generally know what all of the causes are. Some additional lions could have been hit by cars. People didn't know what they were. They didn't report it. And so we focus mainly on our legal harvest for our estimates. So as you see, we can get roughly about the same estimate, but our precision is going to be a little bit lower. So we focus all of our efforts on the mandatory reporting. And so we take it one step further because these are such difficult animals to get a, to get a sample from. Generally, our returns that have been marked are fairly low. So they're within usually less than 10. In a good year, if we can get a lot of lions darted, we might get more. But when you have a low return rate, research has shown that this can have a high bias for your population estimate. So we will use a Chapman correction factor for small sample sizes. And that's what we will base all of the rest of our information on. So we take that number and then we project out the number of kittens that are going to be projected for the number of female adults. And so this year we're projecting it out to be about 237 individuals in the Black Hills. As you can see, we do have some precision issues, but we feel that we are kind of bouncing around our population objective. And then we take it another step further to try to project out some of the what we think is going to happen in the next 3 years or so in the red there. That's keeping everything constant, the harvest rate, their survival, their number of kittens per female, and our harvest rate, which is we average that over the last 3 years. And so everything kind of keeps going. This is kind of the trajectory we think that the mountain lion population might go. And so I know that was kind of quick, but if y'all have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Very good. Thank you, Byron. Any questions from the commission? Comments?
Commissioner Beeser, Byron, how many mountain lions did we harvest last year?
I believe it was 45. So this is what the actual number was that we actually that's yes, I believe it was 45. So this is the number harvested here is actually from our actual data, and the number 26 is actually from the number that we darted this past year.
What about on the Wyoming side of the Black Hills? Do you know what they're harvesting there?
I do not know, sir. No, sir.
What about Instagram?
Had a meeting a little while ago. I can't remember the actual numbers that they were possibly shooting.
Do you have a number for incidental takes or anything like that?
I believe I'm not quite sure if Andy Lindblom is going to present on that or not, but I think I cannot remember for life of me how many incidentals there were. I think we had I don't want to misspeak on that one. I'll let Andy say something if he's on.
Great, thank you.
Byron, this is Commissioner Rissler. Can you go to that last slide? I wanted to look at those red lines where we would be moving into 2027. So if we continue where we are now, is it accurate to say we may be below our objective numbers by 2027? Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, ma'am. That is, if everything stays the same. Now, we do live in a very stochastic environment, so things can change drastically depending upon several different factors. If harvest increases, this may go lower. So this is just giving a snapshot for the last 3 years into what we're projecting now into what's projected into the future. So this is it's kind of a snapshot for what's going on right now, but this could go higher, it could go lower, but this is our best educated guess as to where we're headed.
Okay, thank you. So then I guess maybe a follow-up for Andrew Norton that's here, or maybe Andy Lindblom. If indeed we do continue down that line and those projections are accurate, I guess, what management decisions, if any, do you and your team start to look at that moment when we're below our objective?
Yeah, Madam Chair. So Byron said that's the projection based on the last 3-year average, I believe, in female harvest. If we wanted to stay within that objective of 200 to 300 mountain lions, we would probably make a recommendation to do something to ensure that we don't hit that average harvest. So do something to limit the harvest, whether that be there's a variety of tools, limiting season length, changing the number of lions that we currently have for our limit. It's a mouthful explaining the difference between our limit and quota, but essentially right now our harvest limit is well above how many mountain lions we want to harvest, but we could change that to what would be an actual harvest quota and say, I think the average was 26 females harvested. Maybe we would have a quota of 23 females harvested, because then we would know instead of that red line decreasing below objective, it would stabilize. Impose basically some regulatory regulations that would mitigate that harvest.
Thank you. Any additional questions from the commission on what we've heard from Byron or Stephanie at this point? Seeing none right now, if Andy Lindblom is available, we can continue on with the presentation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
If I could just start off addressing some of the questions by Commissioner Bees, would that be all right?
Yes, please.
Sorry, I didn't know when to interrupt the conversation there. It's always a little hard when you're distance here. But as far as the other mortalities by lions that we documented throughout the state last year, we were close to, in the Black Hills, almost 30 non-harvest documented mortalities, and the bulk of those would be either vehicle strikes or removals by the department or the public. So just wanted to provide some of that data and any follow-up if necessary.
Very good. Commissioner Beast, do you have any follow-up questions for Andy?
Did you have the population for the Wyoming side of the border, what they are taking?
Yeah, through the chair. I don't at my fingertips. I can sure get that for you. It's something that we meet annually with Wyoming and talk about that and look at the harvest on both sides and what type of mortality we're seeing. But I don't have that off my fingertips, so I don't want to give you a wrong number if I guess here.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Andy.
All right, so I'll get started here again. Good morning, everybody. Madam Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Roebling, Andy Lindblom here, Senior Big Game Biologist out of Rapid City. And today I am here to wrap up basically the string of lion presentations that you've been hearing with an overview of our Mountain Lion Action Plan. And our Mountain Lion Action Plan is really the end product of our evaluation of all the biological and social data that a lot of which Byron and Stephanie just went over with you. And basically our plan outlines how we as an agency propose to move forward in the future years, given those considerations. So with that, I'm going to try and share here. And can you see everything?
Yes.
Great, great. So just diving right into the plan here, there are five main sections of the action plan. There's a population monitoring section. As some of you may recall, we go over all these different surveys and data sets that we as an agency evaluate. We do that every other year when we bring proposals to you. Byron talked about a little bit of the end results of some of those data sets and our population modeling. Of course, being a large carnivore, depredation and public safety is one of our main objectives that we focus on. In addition, our public involvement and outreach, that's important when managing mountain lions, and Stephanie just gave a great overview of some of our involvements to capture that. And what I'm going to focus on today are our population goals and our management objectives and strategies. But before I get into how we propose to manage mountain lions into the future and some of our strategies, I want to talk a little bit about how we currently manage our mountain lion harvest in the state. We basically have three units. We have our Black Hills unit, and within that, we have our Custer State Park unit, and then everything outside that we'll call our statewide unit. And there are some similarities, but some differences in how we manage these three areas. So for as far as licensing requirements, for to hunt lions in any of these areas, you do need a statewide permit. And that statewide permit is good in any of these areas. In addition, in Custer State Park, because it is such a small area, you're also required to have a limited access permit, which are issued via lottery. As far as methods, hounds are not allowed in the current Black Hills unit, but they are allowed, however, within the Black Hills, within Custer State Park, and also statewide. As far as season dates and harvest limits, we do have those established for the Black Hills and CSP units, but outside of the Black Hills and the statewide unit, the season is year-round and the harvest is unlimited. And we do have an objective in the Black Hills, but we do not have an objective on our general statewide area. As far as all the other regulations that pertain to how you may and may not hunt mountain lions, those are all the same regardless of where you're hunting. So with that, I want to get right into our objectives and strategies and start with objective one here, and that's to monitor and assess mountain lion populations by conducting scientifically based biological surveys. And of course, like I mentioned, we do a fair number of surveys and evaluate a lot of different data sets of mountain lions in the state. And here's just a few I want to talk about. First, of course, one of our important data sets is harvest, and we're going to annually survey hunters to get that harvest. But we also require a mandatory check for anybody who's successful in harvesting a lion. And we get harvest data from that, but we get some other important biological data that we use as well. In addition to harvest, we also evaluate all of our non-harvest mortalities. That's an important data set for us to look at. And last but not least, we estimate abundance of mountain lions in the Black Hills. So moving on to objective two, to manage mountain lion populations for both maximum quality recreational hunting opportunities. Of course, we have to consider both the biology and the social aspects behind that. And so dealing with the biology, our objective for the Black Hills is 200 to 300 mountain lions. And as Byron just went over, we do feel like we are right in that area. We are meeting that objective. As far as the social aspect that Stephanie just went over, one of our strategies here is to collect scientifically based public input from hunters, landowners, and the general public. And based on the results of what Stephanie just went over, we do feel like from a social perspective, we are managing the population where the majority of the public would like to see it. Continuing on with objective two, just want to highlight a couple more strategies. First, for the Black Hills Fire Protection District, we do have an objective there to maximize hunting opportunity for unique hunters. And of course, you've heard me talk about this for our other species and some of our other plans, but we also have this for lions as well. And we can do that in the Black Hills by allowing unlimited boot hunting opportunity, and we regulate their harvest primarily by season lengths and harvest limits. Now, because boot hunters have such low hunter success, we don't have to limit the number of licenses. We can provide unlimited hunting opportunities in the Black Hills. In Custer State Park, we have a different objective. Our objective there is to maximize hunting opportunity for those folks who do want to use dogs. And because they are so successful, we do need to regulate that harvest by limiting the number of people that can hunt in that area or the number of permits. And we also restrict season lengths. Outside the Black Hills, different management strategy. As I pointed out earlier, our main objective is to minimize potential human conflicts. But we also take this opportunity to maximize hunting opportunity for those folks who want to use dogs. And the last thing I want to talk about, last but not least, would be our objective three. Of course, we are dealing with a large carnivore here, and so it's important that we work with private landowners, municipalities, and the public to resolve any depredation or human safety concerns. We do document and respond to all mountain lion depredation and human safety concerns in a timely manner. That's very important dealing with mountain lions. We also do provide some technical assistance to municipalities and other folks regarding how to deal with mountain lion human conflict situations. And of course, that's not always the only tool we have. Sometimes we have to utilize our mountain lion kill permit when warranted to address both depredation and human safety. And with that, that's what I have put together for you today for the Mountain Lion Action Plan.
Very good. Thank you, Andy. Any questions from what we've heard from Andy just now, or even Stephanie or Byron? Comments?
Question.
Commissioner White?
Commissioner White, Andy, could you tell me what the success is of hunting with dogs versus boot hunting?
Yeah, through the chair.
Yes.
So success for our boot hunters is usually around, for those folks that actually hunt, usually around 3.5%. If you look just at all licensees, those folks who buy a license, were usually about 1.5% of that results in the harvest of a lion, so pretty low success. For those folks that use hounds, we're generally in that 50%+. It kind of depends on what year you look at, but a much higher success rate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner White. Commissioner Locken.
Yeah, Andy, Commissioner Locken here. You use the term kill permit. I guess I'll have to admit, I didn't know you were issuing any. What kind of success are you seeing on that? Or what do you see as a result of those?
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Locken. Yeah, let me provide a little bit of clarification. We as an agency can lethally remove lions under the authority of the kill permit that's granted to us through the legislature. So we exercise that right in depredation situations and in situations that involve human safety. So that's just a tool that we have to utilize sometimes. And so that's what I meant by kill permit. Of course, the general public, they also are authorized according to state law in certain situations to lethally remove a lion. Of course, they still have to report that to us and turn it over to the agency, and we record those and keep track of those as well. But that's what I meant by a kill permit, if that helps.
Follow-up, Commissioner Locken?
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Very good. I'm going to jump on a follow-up from Commissioner Locken. Can you give me again, do we have a number on how many kill permits, either from the department or 30? We were at 30, or from the public?
Yes.
30, either we'll bring the renewals 30 over above our quota. No,
Andy, do you have a number on kill permit from the department or the public that's had to report it?
Yeah, removals last year, we were at about 21 across the entire state.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Additional questions? Questions, comments from the commission? Commissioner Bees?
Commissioner Bees here, Andy. There's a lot of variables that come into play, but with our objective being that, up to 300, and we're at that 200 and some middle range of our objective, why are mountain lions ending up in Connecticut and Wisconsin and Nebraska and Oklahoma from the Black Hills? Is it because we have too much population in the Black Hills that they're forcing them out to find new territories? And then that's kind of one of my questions. And then it seems like our on the increase of people, more sightings, especially in around our towns. We about have a daily occurrence of mountain lions and being in our towns in the Black Hills. I mean, we've got pictures and photos to prove them. And I hear about it quite a bit from people. We've had horses being attacked in the foothills. There's been cases of that. Last year, we had one turkey hunter get pounced on. And it didn't really, he thought it was a turkey, you know, I'm sure. And so there was no harm done there. But we're getting a rise in these situations more and more all the time. And I would think, to me, I don't agree with the quota being where it's, or the population being where we're at. If we got lions leaving the hills and these instances are on the rise, to me, logically thinking, that tells us we have too many lions in the hills. What's your opinion on why these things are on the increase and happening?
Yeah, through the chair.
Yes.
Commissioner Bees. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, one of the things that, you know, we learned through our research, and we've done a fair number of research projects in the Black Hills, right? And one of the things that we definitely documented is the dispersal rate. And regardless of where we were with our population, or regardless of the lion density, almost all the subadult males disperse. It's just the nature of the beast. That's just what they do. And even if we had a low density, we'd still see a higher rate of those subadult males dispersing. So I think that's just biology, right? And obviously, the more lions we have in the hills, the more dispersal you can have. So I think there can be some relationships there. But I definitely wouldn't say the dispersals are because of our high densities. We're just going to see that anyhow. And if it's all right, I'll move on to the second part of the question, you know, regarding removals and observation reports and what have you. And of course, we track that too. We track a lot of different data sets. Sometimes it's hard to really determine the value of those data sets, especially observation reports. You know, if you had a consistent reporting rate throughout time, observation reports would be really valuable. But, you know, one thing we do feel like we see and other states see as well is as people get used to an animal, they quit reporting it. So that observation report doesn't stay consistent. But obviously, we have more people that have moved in the state, too. We have a lot more ring cameras out there than we ever used to have. That's a technology we never used to have. People see animals that they never used to see. So we have seen a bump up in our observation reports. And this last year, we were at about 100 verified observation reports across the entire state. The year before that, we've been bouncing around that 50 or so for quite a few years. So yeah, we did see a bump up for one reason or the other. So I do agree with you. We're seeing more of that.
So another question, it was mentioned earlier about where we're at off our population over the last 3 years, that we might be harvesting too many female lions. So what do we do to keep the population where it's at? how do we keep from harvesting these female lions to keep our population objective where we want it?
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Bees. Yeah, I mean, that's something, if we get to that point, I think that's definitely discussions that we as staff and an agency and obviously the commission need to have. We're not there yet. You know, that projection is based on assuming that we're going to see all the same harvest rates, all the same removal rates, all the same mortality that we've been seeing 3 years down the road. That's really a crystal ball approach, right? We don't know what tomorrow brings, let alone 3 years down the road. So if all things stay consistent, yeah, we probably will fall below that objective. But yeah, I would say when we get there, then we have to start talking about options to reduce that harvest. And there's a lot of ways to do that. You could do it with season links, you know, you can, I can't think of all of them off the top of my head, but there are a lot of ways to reduce that female harvest.
Commissioner Bruce, any other follow-ups?
No.
Any other questions or comments from the commission? Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, Andy, this is Commissioner Whitmire. On the 21 removals, what tools do you have for that? Is that typically do you rely on houndsman persistence on that, or is it aerial, or just kind of what methods do you use when it's actually removal where you're targeting a particular animal?
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, we have a houndsman that works for our agency, and that's our primary tool to go after those problem lions. Or sometimes they're incidental by us or the general public. But yeah, our houndsman is our main tool for removing those problem lions. We do occasionally do some live trapping too, some cage traps and what have you. And that's another tool we may utilize. But I would say our hounds are our biggest tool for that.
Very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Additional questions from the commission? Comments? I would just like to thank everybody that put this together and allowing all of us to take a look at the comments from the public. There were a lot of comments to go through, and they were from one end to the other. So I think that's beneficial for us as commissioners to see where the public's thoughts are on this, because this is a passionate topic, especially for those folks that live out there in the western part of our state. So this information is good. We appreciate it, and thank you all for your hard work to share that with us. Andy, are we done now? Very good.
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. With that,